NPR's Tom Heisinger tells the story of this music and writes, "I feel your pain." The phrase might still be linked to Bill Clinton's 1992 presidential campaign, but it's also an apt descriptor for a project by The Crossing, the adventuresome Philadelphia area choir based on some very old music. The sentiment, trying to understand another's suffering, is an instinctual human trait, not lost on Danish composer Dietrich Buxtehude, who in 1680 produced a 7-part cycle of cantatas called, in translation, Most Holy Limbs of Our Suffering Jesus. Fast forward 337 years to The Crossing's compilation of pieces called Seven Responses. That's seven contemporary composers, each riffing off one of Buxtehude's limb cantatas. Caroline Shaw, the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, singer, and violinist, chose Ad Manus, the title of her 18-minute inspiration, to the hands, is a simple translation of Buxtehude's original Latin. Shaw tells us, for example, what she imagines in the third movement. The text, she says, is a riff on Emma Lazarus's sonnet, The New Colossus, famous for its engraving at the base of the Statue of Liberty. The poem's lines, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," and its reference to the statue's beacon hand, and that would be the hand holding the beacon, present a very different image of a hand, one that is open, beckoning, and strong. No wounds are to be found there, only comfort for those caught in a dangerous and complex environment. Finally, Heisinger explains her moving sixth and final movement. Shaw closes the suite with I Will Hold You, a movement of beauty and solace, stillness and luminous swells of interlocking choral parts, all propelled by softly plucked strings. Near the end, she quotes Buxtehude's tender refrain, In media manuum tuarum, in your hands. With the words I will hold you repeating, the song acts as a musical balm for suffering. If we're in pain, no matter who we are or what our religious convictions might be, we all need to be held tightly. Caroline Shaw writes, they could be the words of Christ, or of a parent, or friend, or lover, or even a nation. Ever, ever will I hold you. Ever, ever will I enfold you. Words of Caroline Shaw and NPR's Tom Heisinger. The image of soothing, comforting, enfolding in this piece could summon also the notion of protection at the same time. The holding and embracing in this piece is intimate, and it will be contrasted with a sense of protection that is big and bold and extroverted in a concert this weekend by the Bach Choir of Bethlehem. The spring concert of the Bach Choir of Bethlehem will take place this Sunday at 4 at the First Presbyterian Church in Bethlehem, led by Christopher Jackson, artistic director and conductor of the Bach Choir. We had a chance to speak by phone with Dr. Jackson about the ensemble, its history, and its concert for springtime.
We are the oldest Bach Choir in the United States. We were founded in 1898, and people who have been a part of the Bach Choir, these are community members, and they come from all over and so many different professions. We are auditioned, but, you know, we have public school educators, we have people who work in medical fields, people who are more tradesfolk, just everyone who really, really enjoys singing. and does it at a high level. We have folks who have been in there for over 40 years, and they're still singing really well. And we also have folks who have either are currently in college or just graduated who have joined our ranks in the last year or two. And so it's just such a joy to work with this spread of experiences and perspectives on life. And we do a lot of Bach, but not entirely Bach.
Let's do the math, Christopher. Let's just say this is a very special anniversary year.
It is. We are about to finish celebrating our 125th anniversary. And, you know, for any organization to be around for 125 years is remarkable. But, you know, we are a nonprofit, and I am the seventh director in the history of the organization. So you can sort of, you know, divide 125 by seven. We've got a lot of longevity here, people who choose to make this a home. And, you know, I can say that how honored I am to be the steward of the organization in its celebration of its 125th anniversary.
And you've been making careful choices to mark that august milestone. For example, now we're circling around the seasons. What were you thinking? Spring?
Well, you know, spring is an interesting time. We have multiple things that are going on, both sort of physically with the changes of season, but also very related to Bach's world, what was going on in the Christian liturgical calendar, the Lutheran calendar at the time. And so I picked a program. This year we're going to be right in the middle of Lent. And so I picked a program that sort of uses some Lenten hints, but then because it is spring, I also wanted there to be a slightly celebratory aspect to coming out of winter. And so for the celebratory aspect, I chose one of Bach's, if not the most popular or famous cantata, it's certainly up there. Ein feste Burg ist unser Gott. A mighty fortress is our God. And, you know, so many of listeners probably have encountered that hymn. Well, it's a chorale tune that Martin Luther actually wrote himself. And it would have been very well known to the attendees of Bach's church at the time. And so he has this cantata that he wrote that features this chorale tune very prominently. And it's just a blast. I also programmed it, though, because by all accounts, we believe that this cantata was performed for the first time in the United States right here in Bethlehem 200 years ago. So it seemed like a really auspicious time to program it, and I'm enjoying it so much.
Since you are a singer, I know that you're not warmed up or anything, but could you just do da-da-da-da-da-da so I don't have to do that?
Sure, sure, sure. So, you know, people probably are used to hearing, a mighty fortress is our God. And sometimes the text is different depending on the translation here. It might ring a bell.
Thanks, Christopher. You're such a good sport. And what was the occasion that Bach had in writing the cantata?
We don't have any, as far as I understand, we don't have any specific rationale for him bringing it back in Leipzig. We do know that it was partially based on an earlier cantata that still quoted the same chorale tune, actually. So, like he was prone to do, he repurposed a lot of his music and brought it back out, at least partially to save time. He was a very busy man in Leipzig. But and we know that he modified it and worked on it quite a bit, which is also a sign that he liked it. We know that of looking back at Bach's music. If he wrote something that he really thought was of high quality, then he would find ways to bring it back and tinker with it a little bit. And it's clear that he's done that with this cantata as well.
What are the instrumental forces that contribute to the festive nature?
Well, okay, so the original, Bach's original, actually just calls for oboes and strings, but one of Bach's sons, Wilhelm Friedemann Bach, actually got a hold of it and added some trumpet and timpani parts to two of the movements. And so that really ups the level of festivity. But I even think that no matter the instruments, The music itself is, it's got so much energy behind it. I wouldn't classify all of it as happy. It certainly is triumphant. That's the word I would probably use, because in nearly every verse, the text, is very much about overcoming the devil. And for just kind of a fun aside, a lot of Martin Luther's writings actually have to do with this. He was a little preoccupied with, you know, actual physical manifestations of evil or of the devil. And if you know, your listeners feel like getting into the weeds about that, they can go and do their own research. But that thinking, that sort of idea of triumphing over the forces of evil runs throughout the entire cantata.
And I love it that you say it's a blast to perform. And that's a blast to perform because of that energy and the feeling of the music. Is propulsion an all right word?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there are two movements that I'm thinking of in particular. There's a huge opening movement where Bach is just kind of proves how genius he is. He takes every individual line of the chorale tune and he turns it into a fugue. So he starts with the first phrase and he writes a fugal sort of thing for the choir. He goes to the second phrase, turns that into a fugue, goes to the third phrase, turns that into a fugue. I mean, he just shows his absolute fluency as a composer, and it's fun. So, I mean, there's certainly the first movement, but the second movement has this frenetic and perpetual string line that is, it's so driving. And it has, again, that sort of energy that we're talking about. And over the top of this frenetic string line, the soprano is singing the chorale melody in long notes, doubled by the oboe. And then under that, the bass soloist is matching the energy of the string. So you've got these two very florid and acrobatic lines with this gorgeous chorale melody just kind of soaring over the top. And Bach does something like that in the later movement, in movement 5, where the entire choir is singing the chorale tune in octaves with each other. So the choir is in it, but only singing the chorale tune and over the top of a very, again, energetic, multi-part sort of string accompaniment. So all these things combined, it leads to this very strong and firm sort of musical interpretation of this triumph. It's so much fun.
No wonder he liked it, right? It sounds like he would.
Yes.
Wow, I'm hot here. This is really good.
Yeah, I was studying earlier today, and I can't keep a smile off of my face whenever I'm you know, really studying these movements. So I really hope people come out and see it in person. It'll be really spectacular.
If we do find ourselves on the radio anyway, playing Buxtehude, we always say, oh, and then there's the story that Bach walked miles because he had such reverence for Buxtehude and he wanted to hear him play. Tell us about that relationship.
Well, Buxtehude represents this early Germanic cantata style. And the reason Bach traveled so far to go see Buxtehude is actually more because of the organ writing. Buxtehude was making great strides in pushing the art of writing for the organ forward. But it's undeniable that Bach would have heard some of Buxtehude's cantatas. And it's interesting, Buxtehude died in 1707, so that would put Bach at about 22 years old when Buxtehude died. So the impression that Buxtehude must have made on Bach, it's hard to say exactly what it is because their styles are so different. I hear and feel Buxtehude's style as being more intimate and also more, there's this intimacy and this sort of emotional, it's like a small yet profound thing. It feels so intimate that it really feels like it's a different era than Bach, although the two overlapped. So we know that Bach picked up a little bit of this. If you look at Bach's early cantatas, they resemble Buxtehude a bit more in that the movements are shorter, there's no da capo arias, there might be an instrumental opening to the cantata, like no voices at all, that really helps set the mood. And you can find that in Bach's early cantatas, which he started writing cantatas right around the time of Buxtehude's death. So there is a lot of evidence that Buxtehude did have an impact on him, but really the two feel quite different.
Do we understand, too, that Bach was playing hooky. He didn't want to go back. He wanted to stay around a little bit more with Buxtehude.
Yeah, I mean, Bach was always a little bit at odds with nearly all of his employers. And, you know, he really knew how to get under their skin. And so Bach initially left to go be around Buxtehude and hear his music and got permission from his employers. But he kept extending the visit. And I think there was even some sort of, you know, he was putting pressure on his employer either to help him potentially get to another job or get a raise, or, you know, he used this as a means of putting some extra pressure on his employer at that time. And, you know, Bach is kind of cheeky in that way. You get the sense that he really tried to carve out what he wanted in life and did a pretty good job doing it.
So what will we hear?
Well, we're going to be doing 2 out of the 7 cantatas from a collection. This collection of 7 cantatas is called Membra Jesu Nostri, and it is a set of Lenten cantatas. So I started by saying, you know, the spring concert, we wanted to delve a little bit into Lent, which is a pretty somber time of year. And then I also wanted to acknowledge that we'll be getting out of winter with Ein Festeburg. But, you know, this set of cantatas, each cantata is specifically about a part of Jesus' body that was wounded during the crucifixion. And that's a heavy, heavy topic. But this poetry from this time, yes, of course, it talks about the suffering that Jesus must have experienced while being crucified. But it also, it goes deeper into this combination of suffering, but also love. You feel such immense admiration and love in Buxtehude's music, in addition to the sadness. This sort of admiration and love coming from someone who would be so grateful for the sacrifice that was made, and this sense of wanting to take care of someone who's been wounded. And so they're very personal and touching and moving cantatas, and we'll be doing 2 of them. We'll be doing Ad Manus, which means to the hands, and Ad Latus, which is to the side. And yeah, we'll do those back to back. And that is related to the other major piece on the concert, which I'm excited to tell you about.
There are a number of distinctive composers writing currently, and what we keep hearing over and over is Caroline Shaw. She writes for voice. She's been in Room Full of Teeth, right? She's a singer herself. Introduce us to Caroline Shaw and what it is that you've chosen.
So I'm really excited about the opportunity to talk about Caroline Shaw. She is one of my personal favorite artists to explore right now for a lot of reasons. She's very thoughtful as a composer, and you can tell she has this combination that I find exists in Bach as well. There's immense intellect and study of the materials, but also equally balanced by emotion and skill at writing. So, as you pointed out, she writes for a lot of different forces, but she was a longtime member of Room Full of Teeth, which just won another Grammy this year, and that album actually has some of her music on it. And she still, I think, performs with them as she can. But this piece, it is called To the Hands, and that's the translation of the Buxtehude, Ad Manus, To the Hands. And she was commissioned to write this piece as a part of a bigger project of composers responding to this initial work by Buxtehude, this Membra Jesu Nostri. And what she chose to do was to quote a lot of the Buxtehude. So there are direct quotes of Buxtehude's music, but then what she does with it is really remarkable. It goes through these transformations. And I don't want to spoil it too much for people, but if you can imagine hearing a German Baroque sort of intimate sound and then letting a modern composer keep the intent of what's going on. She doesn't go far afield with it, but suddenly you'll get a phrase repeated over and over again in a way that becomes quite haunting. Or, you know, the choir will continue to quote Buxtehude while suddenly the string section does something very new underneath it. And it's this beautiful way of letting old music have a really interesting modern context. And aside from what she does musically, I think what she does in her choice of texts and the subject matter is also extremely profound and very Lenten in a lot of ways. And if you'll allow me a second to explain, she uses Buxtehude's text. The English translation of the Buxtehude, the opening movement, is, "What are these wounds in the midst of your hands?" is the English translation. It's part of that, what I was saying, that sort of intimate connection that Buxtehude's music has, watching somebody be injured. Well, she uses that, and then she also changes the text at the end of the first movement, and this is where you really start to understand where she's going. She changes the text to be, "What are these wounds in the midst of our hands?" And I like this for a number of reasons. During Lent, you know, the Lutheran Passion tradition, if you can think of something like a St. Matthew Passion or, you know, the St. John Passion, you're actually asked to try on a number of perspectives in that tradition. And what I mean by that is, if you're familiar with those large works, you find yourself in the perspective of the angry crowd who is yelling to crucify Jesus. You also find yourself in the perspective of one of Jesus's disciples. You also are in the perspective of a random onlooker. And then you have your own perspective as somebody who is here in this moment, looking backwards in time. This sort of perspective changing is one of the reasons why I think the Passions are really powerful, one of the reasons I think that Lent is a powerful season in a number of ways, and why these traditions still hold immense value to us in the present. We could all stand to benefit from changing our perception. And Caroline Shaw asks us to do this in the opening movement. What are these wounds in the midst of our hands? And what she means by that is also, how are we responsible for suffering and what suffering is being done to us currently? And she never really tells you which one it is, which is something that I also admire about her. She doesn't demand that you look at other people's suffering. She, I think, very skillfully understands that the suffering of other people may also be our suffering. And she doesn't tell you to feel that way. She lets you explore that on your own.
What a beautiful juxtaposition of pieces for the performance that you're going to bring us. Christopher, being a vocalist herself, how does she write for the voice, perhaps differently in the other pieces, but let's talk about this piece.
Well, I've always found her vocal writing to be very intuitive. So as a singer herself, she knows what it feels like to sing something, and she knows when she's asking for something difficult, and she knows when she's written something that's very easy and singable. And so the lines, especially because she's quoting Buxtehude a lot of the time, the lines are very singable, but, you know, sometimes she likes to play with rhythm. And so we'll find some rather complicated overlapping rhythms. So we'll get triplets in the tenors and basses while the sopranos and altos are singing in sort of straight time above, creating this sort of mix of rhythmic feelings that all layer over the top of each other. And that's when she gets a little tricky. Also, occasionally, she'll take a passage that sounds very straightforward normally, and then suddenly she'll make everything turn into major chords for a brief period of time. And the effect is it's kind of mysterious, and it's a little unnerving, or you feel like you're being pulled forward through the music because suddenly everything is a major chord and it drags you forward. It's a really interesting effect, and she does this actually in a lot of her music. But she writes so well for the voice, it's a joy to sing.
And how are you structuring the program in terms of chronology, opening, middle, final pieces, that sort of thing?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. So the official title of the spring program is Bach Inspired. And we came up with that for a reason, but we're going to start with the Buxtehude, both of the cantatas, so that people can hear where both Caroline Shaw and Bach go from Buxtehude, right? What the inspiration was there. So we do our two Buxtehude cantatas, and we go from that into the Caroline Shaw so people can really hear the quotes. They'll have just heard the Buxtehude cantatas that she directly quotes in her music and what she does with it. So it should have this feeling of transformation. But I think Caroline Shaw was also inspired, though, by the passion tradition of Bach in that perspective changing that I was talking about. So you can see this inspiration, both Bach being inspired by Buxtehude, Caroline Shaw being inspired by Buxtehude, but also Caroline Shaw being inspired by Bach. So Buxtehude, Caroline Shaw, small intermission. We open the second half with a piece that I haven't even talked about yet. It's a short piece by American composer Carol Barnett, and it's called McKay, and it's based off of a sacred harp melody. But the reason I programmed it is because Carol Barnett takes this sacred harp tune and treats it exactly the way that Bach treats a chorale tune. So you hear it in long notes in the soprano, and you hear fragments of it in every other voice part in this highly rhythmic way. So that opens our second half because, I mean, it's really easy to see the link between Carol Barnett's writing and how Bach treats a chorale. And we jump straight into the Bach cantata, A Mighty Fortress, Ein Feste Burg, and that closes the concert.
Christopher Jackson, artistic director and conductor of the Bach Choir of Bethlehem, speaking about the spring concert, Bach Inspired, that will take place March 17th, this Sunday afternoon at 4 at the First Presbyterian Church, 2344 Center Street in Bethlehem. For more information, on the web, bach.org, bach.org.